place to have a party.
Welcome to the Tea Party, the Hatmakers podcast where we connect with hatters from around the world. Talk hats and hat making to build the community and share tips and tricks to take your hat making to the next level.
Wow.
So sit back, pour yourself a brew, and settle in because here comes the show. On this episode of the Hatmakers podcast, we're chatting with Meg from Mad Patty Hat Co. Based out of Maine in northeastern USA, Meg has been making hats since 2017 and specializes in custom-made and ready-to-wear fur felt fedoras. Balancing attention to detail with the concept of wabi-sabi, Meg continues to be an example of what it means to refine one's craft while being open to the creative potential in each moment. So let's dive into the show and my conversation with Meg.
Right. Well, welcome to the show. So how do we start? Let's ask, how are you? Where are you from? Who are you? What do you do?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you, Jack, so much for having me. My name is Meg Patty, and I am the founder and owner of Mad Patty Hat Company, located in Maine in the United States on the East Coast. And yeah, I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here hanging out with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy to have you here. Excited to have a chat.
Yes.
So how long have you been making hats?
I've been making hats since about 2017. That's when I started learning and practicing and just kind of, you know, getting into it. I didn't bring any hats to market and like launch my brand until 2019. Which at the time, you know, I would have told you I didn't want to launch until I felt like everything was perfect. And if I looked at hats that I made when I launched compared to hats that I make now, it's like probably pretty embarrassing. But yeah, so
yeah, that's all of us. That.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So how did you get started, and what inspired you to start making hats?
Yeah, so. I've honestly, I feel like everyone says this, but I've always loved hats. And I would say that the sort of, I always kind of had this in the peripheral of my vision, like someday I would love to, you know, own a little shop where I sell some of my favorite things like hats and shoes, and bow ties. And I was in 2016, I was in Italy on my honeymoon. And at the time I was working for like a Fortune 500 company and like doing the corporate grind and all of that. And my wife and I stopped into a little hat shop in Rome. And I had this totally like nonverbal sort of interaction with the shop owner. And he helped me pick out a hat. It was just a little pork pie, you know, get the size right, get a style that fit me well and everything. And it was just kind of a really beautiful thing to find common ground over hats without, you know, without having to really even worry about the language barrier. And so, I mean, I'm like a hopeless romantic, so I tend to romanticize everything, but I left that, you know, Anna and I walked out of the hat shop and I turned to her and I was just like, all I want to do is quit my job and just own a hat shop. And so that was kind of like, I'm literally, you know, we're on our honeymoon and I'm like, I'm typing my resignation right now. And she's like, okay, maybe pump the brakes. Like, let's just, let's get through this. But it was only like 3-ish months later that I did actually resign. And I got into doing like Airbnb stuff to kind of close the gap and rental property stuff. And I knew that I needed to clear the slate for anything new to come my way. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be owning a hat shop at that time. In fact, I think when I resigned, I was like, maybe I'll become a barber and I'll sell hats in my barber shop. So it was, you know, kind of a progression. But after a little bit of time out of the corporate world, some stars aligned where I actually ended up buying a bow tie company that was based right here in Maine. And in order to own the company, I needed to learn how to make bow ties. So I did that. And after learning how to make bow ties, I was like, well, shit, if I could learn how to make bow ties, I could learn how to make hats, right? And I say this all the time, but it was way harder to learn how to make hats than it is to make bow ties. But I've basically been learning ever since. And so like I said, in 2017, I started, you know, getting into that and then launched the brand in 2019. So.
How was your wife when you came to that realization in the middle of your honeymoon?
So she's the absolute best. I could not ask for better support. And, you know, she's a front row spectator to the fact that I was pretty miserable in my job at that time. And so she was, you know, she was all for the do something different and do something that makes you happy, because she knew that would allow me to show up better in all my relationships. So yeah, she was great about it. Wow. I have no complaints whatsoever. Yeah.
And do you still own the bow tie company?
I do not. No. Okay. I had it up through basically when the pandemic hit, a huge chunk of my business was weddings. And so coupled with the fact that I truly enjoy making hats a lot more than I enjoyed the bow tie end of things, I decided to kind of close that chapter and focus on hats. And yeah. Nice. Oh my God. Hang on. Let me get my buddy here.
Right. Who's that?
Somebody wants to be noisy.
Oh, cutie.
This is Kenzie.
Hey, Kenzie. What kind of dog is that?
So she's part King Charles, which is in the Spaniel family, and part Bichon. So she's hypoallergenic and
doesn't molt. And no hair around the house.
Yeah, no hair, but she requires attention apparently at all times.
We've got a miniature schnauzer, and she's exactly the same. Yeah. Just loves to nice. Cuddle. Yeah.
Yeah. That's super cute. Hi, you're being bad.
So how did you go about learning to make hats?
Okay, so predominantly watching videos on YouTube, reading everything I could get my hands on, whether it was books or like the Fedora Lounge, and like reading through the forums there, and just, you know, deconstructing existing hats that I had and trying to understand, you know, how they were put together and how you arrive at that, and just practicing a lot. And when I'd run into like this, I don't know what to do next, I would just go scouring for anything I could get my hands on. I'm predominantly self-taught. I mean, when I first started, I'm kind of stubborn, and I'm not like generally the type of person to ask for help on how to do anything. Is that you too?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I very briefly reached out to a couple hat makers once I had gotten pretty immersed in it to see if I could shadow. And I didn't hear back. I think I tried like two hat makers or something, and I didn't hear back. And I was like, all right, fine, I don't need any help. And so I'm just trying to dissect everything I could get my hands on and learn from mistakes. And I've had a handful of, since really getting involved in the hat making community, there's a handful of hat makers who have been very generous with, you know, bouncing ideas around, you being one of them, of course. But overall, I think if you want the information, it's out there. You just got to dig.
Yeah, there's a lot of scouring and searching and digging for it in the beginning.
Totally.
And do you remember some of those first hat makers that you used to, I guess, follow or look at trying to work out how to do it?
Yeah, I mean, you're on that list. Austin Zito, Zito Hat Company. Colby is on that list. And then Christy Singh. She's in Jackson, Wyoming.
Singh Hat Company, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. My list is actually Ryan Ramelow as well in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The list is pretty small. When I first started, I was like, no, I'll just follow a bunch of hat makers and try to sort of figure out my place in all of this. Mm-hmm. And then I shortly after that ended up unfollowing almost everyone except for people who I actively talk to. Mm-hmm. And purely because I feel like it's hard to look at other people's stuff all the time and not be influenced by it.
Seems that everybody's influenced by everybody.
Yeah. Which is, you know, that's really great. And that's what art is, I think. I'm almost like, it makes me feel bad. I think it makes me like start comparing myself to other makers. And that's, I just want to enjoy making hats and enjoy the process and feel good about like ideas that I feel like, even if it ends up being something similar to someone else's, I can hang my hat on the fact that this was an idea I came up with in the shower like 5 hours ago.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same. I did the same as you. I followed everybody in the beginning. And then I unfollowed everybody and then slowly started following again just to kind of keep up, see what everyone's doing. And
it is
amazing to see. Sometimes I feel like there's all these ideas just, you know, in the universe, and a lot of people kind of tap into it at the same time. And it's hard to tell if it's like, oh, did you see that? Or are you copying that? Or are you influenced by that? Or did you just pull it out from the same place that we're all inspired from, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's funny that you say that, because early in my hat making, I won't like name names or anything, but I had someone comment on a picture of one of my hats, basically saying that it was trying to duplicate this other hat company. Mm-hmm. And I saw the comment and I was like, I don't even know that hat company. Like go and click on it. I'm like, I've never even seen this brand, but yeah, it's, you know, I don't want to say there's only so much you can do with a hat, but like,
yeah,
at some point there's going to be some, you know, there's going to be some crossover.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey,
do you remember the first hat that you made?
I do. I made, it was like a burgundy colored hat, just a pretty simple fedora with a little ribbon that was, I think, either navy or black on it. And that was for, I had just launched my website and one of my best friends was the first one to place a deposit and get in my queue. So I made that for her. And yeah, she still wears it. I'm like, I really need to make you a new hat.
Can I just take that back and fix up a few little things, please?
Right. Exactly. Mm. Exactly. But yeah. It's good to have the support of friends and family for sure.
Yeah. And so you made your first hat for a friend who was the first customer. And so how did you build like your clientele after that?
So honestly, a lot of it at first was just word of mouth. And really my whole brand I absolutely wouldn't have grown to this point without social media. Mm-hmm. So early on, it was a lot more like referrals and just, you know, sort of personal connections that were sort of, you know, getting some hits out there. When I launched the brand, I also opened a showroom in Portland, Maine, which is like, you know, the main city in Maine. Mm-hmm. And so that generated some kind of, you know, local attention and that was really helpful. And then, and I don't say this to, you know, minimize what the pandemic was, but I think that in a lot of ways, when the pandemic hit, I closed my showroom because Anna is a nurse. And so she was, mm-hmm. constantly exposed to COVID, and I didn't feel comfortable by proxy. I was constantly exposed. I didn't want to see people in person and risk anything. So I closed my showroom, and I ended up just taking my budget for rent and putting it into like boosting posts on Instagram.
That's cool.
And that was, I think that has helped my business the most, honestly.
And so did you begin making hats for people that like in that you met in person, and then kind of switch over to, I guess, doing like remote fittings and things like that for people?
I kind of went like this and back. So I started off like the very first hat that probably the first handful of hats I made were for friends and family who weren't local. So those were all remote consultations and trying to figure that out. And then when I got the showroom, I got obviously a lot more in-person fittings going. And then when I closed the showroom, it was back to how do I make this work like legitimately from a remote perspective. So yeah, it's tough. Doing it remote is tough, but you know, I'm trying to refine that process every year. So yeah.
So what does your setup look like now? Like, as in, where do you source your customers, and how do you interact with them?
Yeah, it's still a lot on Instagram. And then I also do, I bought this ridiculous truck last year. I call it the paddy wagon. It's like a 1978 Toyota Hilux, and it's got like a Chinook camper for a back that's completely empty. So I take that out to vendor shows, and that gets a lot of attention. And so I'll do pop-ups, you know, locally and try to interact and get customers through that. You know, I usually bring all my ready-to-wear hats to those types of things, but it's like you'll sell a couple hats off the, you know, off of the pop-up, but mostly it's like, okay, I like that, but it doesn't quite fit, or I want that, but tweak this. So it's more like almost a business card.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, let's do a custom hat for you that fits perfectly. So I get a lot of customers that way. Had, you know, a couple PR folks reach out and do little spots on local news channels and whatnot. But I would say probably 70% of my business is because of Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
And a lot of the, you know, chatting with folks is right on Instagram.
Yeah. And do you still boost post?
I do, not as much as I did right when I closed up the shop. I usually have one going for like the duration of a month, and I'll put like $150 towards it and just let it kind of keep the momentum going, basically.
Yeah. And how do you find the effectiveness of Instagram? Has it gone up or down for you? Is it maintained?
Do you agree though?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I feel like
it's like, what are all these followers for? No one sees like anything.
Exactly. It's very interesting because I feel like there are posts from before I had a big following that have, you know, that got more traction, and now I have, you know, 19,000 followers, and you know, I could post a hat and get like 70 likes on it. It's like nobody saw this. Right. Exactly. So, exactly. Yeah.
Mm.
But you know, I've been trying to do more reels, and that was really good last year. And then this year I read that Instagram was trying to balance out, like they basically admitted that they went too heavy on reels last year, and this year they're trying to balance out posts and reels. And my experience personally has been that now neither does very well.
They're really balanced, but they still don't perform at all.
So there's certainly, you know, growing pains and challenges there, but it is what it is, right?
Yeah. it was a good thing for a while, for sure.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the paddy wagon? I call it your hatmobile myself, but
that's good too.
But it looks amazing.
It's sweet. I mean, it's manual, obviously. It's got an 83 4Runner engine in it. I mean, what do you want to know about it? You want me to get into
that aspect of it? Well, I'm not really a huge car guy, but I was thinking more how you decked it out for the hats, but you can tell me about the engine and how you're running it.
Those are the two things I know about it from a truck standpoint. I literally saw it and was like, that's pretty and I want it. So I can't take too much credit for how it's decked out, but it is fully carpeted from like head to toe, the whole back, the whole ceiling or roof, whatever, is all carpet. And I ran it all last year as pretty much a blank slate. And I just packed all my hats into it and a couple tables and tablecloth and basically popped up and just would pull everything out. I'm toying with, I wanted to see like what it would be like basically before I commit to building it out in any way. But either this year or next year, I want to run like a Kickstarter campaign to actually build it out in such a way that I could feasibly pop up and have my workbench with me. So that's my vision for that.
So at the moment you're not doing live hat making demonstrations or anything?
It does have like an auxiliary battery attached to it. So I was able to do hat shaping on site. So I brought, I'd bring my iron and I'd have some open crown hats in different sizes and shape them on the spot for customers. And I actually did a little bit of like pouncing and some of the steps that I could accomplish there. But I think it would be sweet to have like the whole, the steam machine, the iron, just everything, some flanges and blocks, and just, really be able to do it all right from the back of the hat. Cause it's tough. Like I'm sure you can relate to this, but it's tough to pop up and do like a show where you're not like, I don't want to just stand around watching people look at my hats. Like I would love to just call it a work day. And, I also think that people love the process. Yeah. I mean, it's fun to watch. So being able to do it right in front of them and just have that experience is, even the little bit that I did with that last year was awesome. So I'm definitely hoping to do more of that.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
So what's your creative process like?
I'm kind of a ruminator. Like I generally get my ideas when I'm not in the shop. It's like I spend a lot of time, like I think we all spend a lot of time on social media or whatever, but I'll spend a lot of time looking at art that's completely unrelated to hat making. Mm-hmm. And try to imagine what, hang on. Sorry. She's cranky.
Puppy dog.
I know. So I'll spend a lot of time trying to imagine ways to incorporate, maybe a technique or a color palette and incorporate that into what I'm working on. And I also, just like fabrics and textiles and stitch techniques and things like that are fascinating to me. So I did a collection recently with that. I don't know if you saw my kimono collection, mm-hmm. right? Utilized some super vintage kimono fabric to make a collection. Like that was really fun. My favorite thing about that was how worn and imperfect the fabric was. Cause I would say like I said early on in our conversation, I can be kind of a perfectionist. And what I love about hat making is it's like the one I would say it's like the one area of my life where I really lean into things not being perfect. Mm-hmm. So
does that feel like a little bit of a relief in some way?
Yeah, totally. It's totally therapeutic because my instinct is to, you know, make it perfect. And whenever I mess something up, it sort of creates an inspiration to do something different than what I planned for that hat. You know, you get a little blemish in the fur or something, so I'll put stitch details over it, or, you know, whatever. I like the way that I'm not in charge, because I think I tend to be kind of a control freak. And so when I'm sitting in front of a hat that is suddenly not turning out exactly how I thought it would, it's like a reminder that, okay, I'm not in charge of this. This is a thing that wants to be this certain thing. Mm. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I get that.
It's kind of hippity dippity, but.
But it's true. I think it's nice to let go and to be able to accept imperfection and to accept the reality or the nature of things.
Yes.
You know, rather than having this super high ideal that you've got to strive to achieve all the time, we can kind of just let go and allow ourselves to be, or allow what's in front of us to be.
Yes, exactly. Mm. I wish I could apply that to more of my life, honestly.
Well, I noticed that your workshop is always looking in perfect order.
Well,
so it's handy.
I know you've given me a hard time about that.
Only because I'm such the opposite, and mine's always a mess.
I admire that, honestly. You know what it is? I have a hard time thinking when there's clutter around me, which I think is probably like the ADHD in me. Mm-hmm. It's like every inanimate object has its own little voice. And so the more stuff that's around me, the more noise I feel. Mm. So I'm always trying to kind of like clear the slate, so to speak, so that I can focus on whatever I want to work on. Yeah, that's an issue for a different podcast.
Hard to find peace when everything's screaming at you.
Exactly.
Yeah. I noticed that you were doing a little bit of dye work on some of your hats. There's this multicolored hat that I saw not too long ago that looks really amazing.
Thank you.
That was really cool. Yeah. Oh, there it is.
That one? Yeah, right, that there. One right there?
Yeah.
That one I did. I did a snow dye on that one. That was fun. I would do things differently the next time, but it turned out pretty cool.
So when you say snow dye, what do you mean by that? Yeah.
So I literally plunked it in the snow, and then I gathered up a bunch of snow and piled it on top of the raw material. Uh-huh. And then I just took a bunch of different, like a powdered acid dye. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just sprinkled it on the snow. So it literally looked like a snow cone. Wow. And then I picked a day when it was really sunny and the snow was melting. Obviously it needed it to saturate a bit. But yeah, that was fun. I wasn't sure. I think where I went wrong on it, I would have boiled some water and dunked the felt in the boiling water before putting it out in the snow, because I put it out dry and obviously the snow was cold, and so the saturation was not as
the felt as much as it could have if it was already wet.
It ended up much more on the pastel end of things than what I thought it would look like based on the color of the snow, but yeah, it was cool. That's a perfect example, though, because I pictured it being super vibrant and it's very muted but still colorful. So I like it.
Yeah, I love it. And do you have like something in mind, like something specific in mind when you're making your hats, like in regards to design and style? Or is it something that is maybe a little bit more free-flowing and just starts to appear as you're making it?
Yeah, I feel like I generally start out with an idea and I rarely end up making that making that hat. Like I said, I definitely have been embracing the direction that the project seems to want to go in. That's with, you know, like trying to make the ready to wear collections and different things. When I'm working on custom hats for clients, it's a total collaboration. I think you operate the same way, but it's very much like, you know, I really try to spend time getting to know the person that I'm making the hat for. And my favorite thing is when a client wants something that I would never cross my mind, and to be able to be like, okay, that seems interesting. Let me see what I can do. And the hats that I think like, what the heck are they talking about, are usually hats that end up being fan favorites, mm-hmm. my favorite, you know. So I think that's a really beautiful aspect of what we do.
Yeah, that's always interesting. Sometimes I feel like I'm really excited about a hat that I'll make, and I'll post it really excited. It won't get any response at all. And then something that I'm just like, oh, that wasn't very good, I'll put it up there, and it's like everyone loves it. I'm like, what's going on here?
Isn't that crazy how that works out?
Yeah, I feel no the exact idea. Same.
Yeah, like, wow, I really don't have a pulse on my customer base at all.
Absolutely, yeah. And so do you have a preference between doing custom orders or ready-to-wear type stuff?
That's a tough question. My instinct is to say, because I tend to be sort of introverted, my instinct is to say that I like just coming up here and making something and not doing the whole back and forth with somebody on a mm-hmm. custom order. But I think that's my comfortable response. And like my actual response is I love the way that custom orders push me to, you know, both artistically and just personally. I think they push me to open myself up more to strangers, yeah. like stranger danger. And just to, you know, try something on a hat that I wouldn't have tried if I didn't have their input on it. So I think for me, the perfect thing is to do, like early on when I started, I was doing almost all custom. And I've kind of found a happy medium right now where it's like, it's predominantly ready to wear with some custom sprinkled in. And I think that's a good mixture for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, I'm mostly custom, and sometimes I find it difficult because a lot of the things that people ask you to make are things that you've made a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it keeps getting asked, but maybe my own personal style has changed since then, you know. Sure. So I kind of keep repeating a lot of the things that maybe I feel like I've outgrown. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, but I love it all. It's all good. And with your ready to wear, are they mostly kind of are they all one offs, or do you have like collections?
They've predominantly been one-offs, but I did that one collection at the, I guess it was the end of last year now, the kimono collection. Mm-hmm. And I haven't officially announced it yet, but I have this idea for a collection coming up this year that's, I want to call it a word. So, you know how people say like a word? Mm-hmm. So I wanted that to be the title of the collection. And then I picture doing like really diluted designs with words that resonate with me, like engraved on the hat. Mm. So pretty simple, I think, in design. I'd like to incorporate maybe some dye and some potentially paint. And maybe stitching, but like not a ton in terms of ribbons and fabric and stuff. Like pretty straightforward, I think. But just kind of highlighting a word that resonates.
So kind of things more on the felt rather than wrapped around the felt, perhaps.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And what's one word that resonates with you?
So one of the words that I wanted to put on is be, because I think honestly most of the words I have picked out right now are things that I'm working on and not good at, or words that like the another one is highly sensitive. I'd like to put on a hat. And yeah, I think, yeah, I don't want to like overshare before I have it all ironed
out.
Don't
give it all away yet. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a good teaser for it. I think if I resonate with these words, I think a lot of people will. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it'll flop.
I highly doubt it.
We'll see. We'll see. That's nice. It's kind of one of those things where you have to just anticipate, or this is what I do anyway, and maybe it's self-protection, but I just assume that nobody's going to like whatever I make. And then that way I'll just be pleasantly surprised if anyone does.
Yeah, everything else is a bonus.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you feel that hat making and putting your creativity out in the world, do you feel that's helped you grow? Has it helped you? I'm totally missing up all my words.
You're good.
Has it helped you grow as a person?
Yeah, I think it has, definitely. I mean, a good chunk of my previous job was like team building and I'm sorry, can you hear her? Is she like as distracting for you as she is for me?
Not at all.
Okay. I'm like picturing you editing this and it's just her like I had to pick her up because she's crying if I'm not holding her. This is so embarrassing. All right.
I can't hear your question. She looks very cute. All right. Though.
All right, good. I do think hat making has made me grow a lot. Like I said, my previous career, I was basically in charge of leadership development for a pretty big team. And I spent a lot of my time growing others. And, you know, I think that was good for me for sure. But there's a lot of delegation that goes into being a leader. And so with hat making, I mean, you know, like every single element of it is on my shoulders. And a lot of it is, there's the actual hat making that's a ton of fun, but there's the website building and the, you know, all these other elements of it that are managing the social media, managing customer relations, trying to make sure that I follow up with customers and ask them to, you know, post reviews on Google about my business. And that's not necessarily comfortable. You know, I tend to be very like, I'm not braggadocious. I'm not like, I don't think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. Like most of the hats I finish, I loathe and like don't think they're good at all, you know? So like asking anyone to vouch for me or, you know, say nice things about their hats is not in my comfort zone. So I think it's pushed me. I think it's definitely pushed me in a lot of ways. And honestly, beyond that, just like for me, it's a personal triumph every single time I finish a hat and send it to somebody and like let it go, because letting anything go is not my forte. I will obsess over things until, you know, until I think I have it all figured out. Thinking, you know, we've been talking about doing this podcast and I've been like perseverating over like making sure that I can think of all the right things to say to you when you ask whatever questions you ask. And I just have a really hard time like relaxing and, letting things be.
Just be, yeah.
So yes, that's a really long-winded answer to say yes. I think it's definitely made me grow a lot.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. Like, it took me, like, I thought of this podcast 2 years ago, wanted to do it 2 years ago, got all the stuff for it 2 years ago, but I was just too shy, you know. And the same with making reels. Like, I hate reels. I hate to be out in front of people, but it's like, oh, it's like a little avenue for growth.
Yeah. It's like certain things that you recognize that you have to do in order to stay relevant or you know, find your people. But it's hard to get out of your own way, I think, when you have the personality that you and I have. And for what it's worth, I would never guess that you're shy. I would never guess that. Like, you seem very, like, on point and on top of everything that you put out. So smoke and mirrors. Proud of it. Well,
thank you. So have you had any really crazy custom requests at all?
I mean, I've had people want, like, I made a hat one time where it was a straw hat and the customer wanted, like, just a little sliver of a different color of a straw hat. That was kind of a challenge to figure out. I generally put a little brim clip on my hats, and I had a customer, this is just brass, but I had a customer who wanted like a 14 karat gold brim clip. And so I think that was like a $500 add-on just for the brim clip. That was kind of, I mean, it was sweet. It looked awesome, but I was like, are you sure? I mean, that's like, all right, cool. Yeah, I'll do that. But I mean, I don't know, I'm trying to think of anything like overly outlandish. I've had some designs that were very vibrant and, like, you know, out of my zone of what I would go with, that have been fun to do. One that was kind of like a peacock theme, essentially. And I mean, that thing was loud. I mean, I've done some fun ones. Also, do you sort of have a hard time remembering hats that you've made?
Yeah.
I feel like I need to like pull up and scroll through and see, oh yeah, there was this. I did one that had like a brooch with a real dead scorpion inside of it. It was kind of neat. Well, do you have like a really crazy one that comes to mind?
I had some guy send me his taxidermied dog, including the head.
No.
Yeah, and he wanted me to make a hat band out of the skin of this dog.
Did you do it?
Yeah, I did. And then sent the head back inside the hat. Yeah, it was crazy.
That's like mafioso stuff.
Oh, it was weird, but it was very cool. He's a pretty cool, eccentric dude. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And
see, that's a good answer.
That's my go-to, yeah. So would you say that you have a style of hat that you like to make, or that you would say is your own?
I would say, I mean, the first thing that just popped into my mind is imperfect. Like, I feel like that's kind of the thread that binds all of my work together, is you know, leaning into the imperfections, which you know, I don't claim to be like a big connoisseur of Japanese culture, but wabi-sabi is kind of the, you know, the notion that imperfection is beautiful, basically. Yeah. And when I first started, that specifically felt important to me, to have influence everything that I make. So I think, yeah, I mean, I try to definitely mix up what the actual visual aesthetics look like. But the common thread, I would say, is the sort of leaning into the imperfections of whatever presents itself in the process.
Yeah. And would you say that your customers are more inclined to purchase, say, a fedora or a wide brim style hat?
Yeah, definitely. I think the majority of the hats I do are somewhere around like 3-inch brims, either a little bigger or a little narrower. And I do a ton of teardrop fedoras. That's definitely a common theme.
Yeah. And yeah. What's your ratio for flat brim to flange brim?
So I've been doing a lot more flanges in the last like 6 months, but mm-hmm. at the beginning, just simply because I didn't have that many flanges, it was predominantly flat brim. So I'd say probably like 60-40 now, mm-hmm. like 60 flat and 40 flanged.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. I'm trying to spread my wings a little bit with brim design and get a little crazier there.
I feel like that's the next step. Like everyone's kind of been doing this flat brim for a while. I feel like things are going to start to move pretty quick.
Yeah, totally.
need a little bit more diversity in the brim shape department.
Totally. Mix it up a bit.
Yeah. So do you have any like hat makers or that you look up to or favorite hat makers that you that you like?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my list is identical to the list I gave you earlier of you know, who I kind of still keep in contact with.
Mm-hmm.
So you were like right off the bat one of the first hat makers that I saw that I felt like I resonated with your style and what you were doing. So you absolutely are at the top of that list. And then, like I said, Austin Zito and Colby and Christy Singh, and Ryan Ramelow. I feel somewhat enamored with Nick Fouquet's work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel some other feelings. So I would keep my list to the folks.
Yeah.
You know, the folks that I said. But I would say the sort of content inspiration of Nick's stuff is mm-hmm. is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of mixed reviews about that guy. But at the same time, I feel like he kickstarted the whole, why don't you try hand-making hats, you know? Like he really did make it kind of cool, you know?
Right, totally.
And yeah. Well, at least he, it seems that he made it a point of focus for a lot of people to notice what you could do. Yeah.
I would agree with that, which I guess then you kind of have to, or you really should tip your hat to Alberto from Mexica.
Yeah.
Because my understanding is he was originally with Nick,
mm-hmm.
And has, you know, obviously done amazing work. And I think he's made a ton of hats for Cam Newton and a lot of cool stuff there. So.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting stories there for sure. I think it might even go back a bit further, to be honest, but I don't know the details.
I know, I'm like tiptoeing around like the folklore of the community.
But, yeah. Now, I feel like everyone is either like really on board or really like, I think once they got inspired, they try to distance themselves pretty quick, you know?
Yeah, it seems that way for sure.
Yeah. And so, excuse me. Is there any person, past or present, that you would like to make a hat for?
So present, I would say, I think it would be really cool to make a hat for Brandi Carlile, musician. I don't know. Are you familiar with her?
I'm not familiar at all. You can tell me a little bit about her if you like.
Yeah, I mean, she's an amazing musician. She's, very heavily involved in activism as well. She's in the, I would say, like Americana sort of space musically. Mm-hmm. And just her story, you know, she's been a huge advocate for the LGBTQ community. And I just resonate with her story quite a bit. So that would be cool. I think she wears Knicks hats predominantly. So I don't know if I can crack into that, but that would be cool. And the other name that comes to mind, which I don't even think he's really a hat wearer, is Grant Hill, who's a former Duke alumni, Duke basketball alumni, and former NBA player. And I just grew up, I played basketball through my childhood and college, and I just grew up loving the guy, so that'd be sweet to make him a hat.
Yeah.
And then personally, I would just say, like, my great-grandfather, who I had the pleasure of knowing and growing up with him. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, the grumpiest guy. but he always let me sit with him and do crosswords with him and word finds and stuff. And, you know, I remember when I was growing up, I had to do a presentation about Italy, because, you know, my family's Italian, and I had to interview somebody about Italy. And so I was interviewing him, and his name was Tony, of course. And I said, Tony. Yeah, exactly. So I was like, you know, so did your parents actually come over on the boat? You know, I was trying to discern, like, because he spoke Italian and English, and so I'm like, did your family actually come over on the boat? And, you know, I'm little, I was probably like 9 or something doing this report, and his response was, well, there sure as hell weren't airplanes. And that will always stick out to me. Like, the comments like that are the things that stick out to me about him. And so I think, you know, I mean, he's Italian, so he, you know, he would look good in a hat. Yeah. And I always felt like I had kind of a special connection with a guy who was predominantly grouchy toward everyone else.
What would you make him if you had the chance?
Oh, it's got to be a pork pie.
Yeah.
You know, it just would have to be. He's like a short little, like, stout guy. Mm-hmm. And I think just a stingy brim pork pie would super give him a cigar. And a little cigar, and he'd be set.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
So what do you love most about hat making?
I think it's got to be the escapism of it. I think, you know, there's so much going on in the world and so much pressure and anxiety and stress surrounding, like, so much.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think when I'm working on hats, it's, you know, outside of feeling like I can be imperfect in that space, I think I also feel like I can block everything else out, where I generally have a hard time blocking anything out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really become a really special space for me, because I can just get lost in it and you know, come out the other side with a tangible thing that proves it.
Makes it worthwhile.
Yeah.
And do you listen to music or podcasts or anything while you work, or are you in more of a silent space?
I do a little bit of both. Every year I try to, you know, curate a little Mad Patty playlist that I'll listen to in the shop that sort of sets the tone. And I've noticed that I usually start the year off with making working on the playlist and listening to it. And then I sort of transition into, like, audiobooks or podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to the Disgraceland podcast all the time. Not sure if you're familiar with that one.
I don't know that one.
Actually, going back to cool hats I made a hat for the host of that podcast. His name's Jake Brennan. And he and his family are amazing people who had the pleasure of knowing now because of making that hat.
Uh-huh.
But his podcast is awesome. It's like a mix of true crime and basically any, you know, all the wild stories about musicians and all the trouble that they've gotten into throughout their careers. And so you get, you know, you could pop, you know, pull up a, an episode about Johnny Cash and get a little bit of a history lesson and like true crime and like all the ridiculous connections that he had. And it's a really cool podcast. And then for books, I mean, audiobooks right now, I'm listening to Spare about Prince Harry. Yeah. I'm at the part of the book where he's talking about getting frostbite on his wiener. But he calls it his toja.
All right. There was no amputation needed.
I mean, the chapter's not over, so okay. Who knows?
I hope it's all right.
Yeah, we'll cross our fingers for Harry.
For Harry.
I got to imagine it's okay. He's got a couple kids now, right?
Yeah.
All right, this podcast is devolving.
Yeah. Let's take it up to a higher level here.
Yeah. Sorry.
So, no, my fault. So what's something that you know now that you wish you knew in the beginning about hat making?
I don't think I wish I knew anything differently. Is that a corny answer?
Yeah.
No, that's not at all. That's fair. But I really feel that way. Like, I think part of what has made me fall in love with hat making is not knowing what the hell I was getting myself into. Like, if I knew then what I know now, I probably wouldn't have started. And not to, you know, not in the sense of like, now I hate it, just in the sense of like a lot of the fun and a lot of the love that I have for it is a direct result of I figured it all out on my own. And not that I haven't figured it all out by any means, but what I have figured out, you know, predominantly is the result of my efforts. And I feel proud of that. So.
Yeah, the hard won battles for the information and, the, and to turn it into something, which you've done amazingly well.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Just trying to keep up with you, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to keep up with everyone. There's like so many new hat makers and they're all killing it, you know?
I know,
it's hard to get by with those the little hats that I've been making for so long.
I know the market is definitely becoming saturated.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Well, I don't know if that's true, to be honest. I always tell myself, you know, there's 8 billion heads out there to hat.
That's true.
So I don't know if there's enough hat makers for them all.
That's true. Yeah. It's a good perspective. It's hard not to feel sometimes like there's new folks popping up all the time, but you're right. Until there's 8 billion hat makers, there's not enough hat makers,
right? Yeah, I want to see photos and pictures of like in history, you know, where you see everyone walking down the street and they've all got a hat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Doesn't it bug you when people say, "I wish I could pull off a hat"?
No, I like it. I'm like, "Oh, you can come here. I'll show you."
Touche.
Yeah.
Touche.
So what are your plans for the rest of the year and moving into the future?
Yeah, I mean, the paddy wagon is definitely on top of my mind, and just popping up locally a lot more this year than I did last year. I don't know, I'm torn. In my mind, I feel like I would love to have a brick and mortar presence, but every time I imagine that and then walk backwards and think about what it would take to do that, I fall in love with my flexibility and my autonomy working out of my attic shop here. So I don't know if that's in the cards for me, you know. Hannah and I want to have a family. I know you're on the verge of growing your family. So I don't know if that's where my path will lead, but definitely a lot more with the truck and a lot more, you know, local events and stuff.
Yeah. The bricks and mortar store is a real commitment.
And,
it doesn't really offer the flexibility, the same flexibility as having a little studio that you can work whenever you want or not.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, is there anything that you would like to share or anything that I should ask you before we kind of close this up?
I don't think so. I just feel really, really honored that you wanted to, you know, meet up and do this. And like I said, I've admired your work for the entire duration of my hat making time. So thank you for being a leader and for being such a cool guy. Like, there's, you know, there's definitely a disparity in this community of folks who are kind and generous with their time, and you're one of them. So
thanks, Meg.
I appreciate it.
I feel like I think everyone's probably pretty good, you know, but like, again, like, we all probably had to find out this information for ourselves and had to win the battles. And I feel like people like really guard it pretty closely because it is something that is valuable, you know.
Honestly, I think that's totally fair.
Yeah.
I do, you know, but because I feel like when I first started and it was hard to figure everything out, there was, you know, a part of me that was like, man, everyone's kind of a dick around here. And now that I'm further into things, it's mm-hmm. like I worked my ass off to know what I know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Joe Schmo, who had a whim this morning that they want to start making hats, reaching out, being like, where do I get this and where do I get that?
Yeah.
You can see, you know, how you feel a little protective of that information. But yeah, you're right. You're right. There's lots of great folks out there, and you're definitely at the top of that list. So
thanks, Meg. I think you are too.
Thank you.
All right. So actually, what we should do is, before you go, let's for these beginner hat makers, what's one piece of advice that you would give someone who wants to learn how to make hats?
I would say, don't let perfection get in the way of progress. And I would say, begin with the end in mind. So kind of what I just said, start with what is your vision and then work backwards to figure out, you know, what step 1, 2, and 3 is. I think make sure that you're using the highest quality materials you can get your hands on, because making a good hat is one thing, but if it's made out of something not good, then the hat's only going to be as good as the material that it's made out of. Right. So, and I would say, like, don't, I mean, this is just my own like thing, but like, don't cut corners. You know, I've had folks reach out to me with hats that someone's made, and it's like, is this right? And it's just I think it's just a bummer when you like, yeah, hat making is fun and it's like awesome in a lot of ways, but that shouldn't supersede, in my opinion, like making a good quality hat. Like, it shouldn't be spicy on the outside and rotten on the inside, basically.
Yeah. Maybe learn the craft before you make it art.
There you go. That's a much more concise way to say it. I'm over here trying to be a poet. Yeah, you got it.
Oh, Meg, you're totally awesome. So if I was wanting to find you on the internet or Instagram, where could I find your amazing work?
Yeah, so my website is www.madpatti.com, and my Instagram is also madpattyhatco, and then same with Facebook. You can at madpattyhatco.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
Meg, it's such a pleasure to have you here and to hear your story.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on. And
thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure, and look forward to having another chat with you down the track sometime.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
Right.
Well, guys, thanks for sticking around for the show. I really enjoyed my chat with Meg, and I hope that you did too. Make sure you check out her work over at madpatti.com and go follow her on Instagram at madpattyhatco. My name is Jack, and I'm a hatter at Creatures of the Wild Unknown, so you can check out my work there. And if you like the show, follow us on Instagram at the Hatmakers Podcast. We've got a bunch of shows lined up for you in the coming weeks, so keep tuned for those and make sure you catch them on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And until then, keep on hatting.